Chapter 31, Concerning the First Find and Containing the Story of Yu San and Yu Lan. "Naidong is late," said Big Tiger. "The sun will set soon." "Something must have happened to him," said Affliction gloomily. "What could happen to him?" asked Big Tiger. "It needn't be very bad," replied Affliction. "A cramp in the leg would be enough." Big Tiger was kneeling before the pastry board, cutting dough strips. Affliction sat opposite him, rolling noodles as thin as knitting needles and throwing them into the saucepan. Seven Stars was sitting in front of the tent, hacking a brick of tea into small pieces and pounding the pieces to crumbs in a stone mortar. She gave Christian the pestle. "The tea must be like coarse dust," she said, and went off to pen the sheep. While she was away, Big Tiger came to see what the pounding was. "I'm pounding the tea into coarse dust," explained Christian. "Stop," said Big Tiger. "You've pounded it far too fine already, and Affliction has made the noodles much too thin. Good Fortune won't be a bit pleased. Come and look at the swans instead." They crept along under the trees as far as the ford. There wasn't a stir or a sound there. The water was like a dark mirror, and little lumps of ice were floating on it like water lilies. It seemed, too, that the Narin Gaul had risen. "Let's see what it's like further up," suggested Big Tiger. "We know our way, as far as this already." "Volna!" cried Christian eagerly. They forced their way through the thicket, but there was no longer any path, only thorn bushes and old dead branches entwined with liana and ivy. A mighty, uprooted poplar lay across their path, its crown touching the ground. "The expedition has to stop here," said Christian. "We'd need an axe to get further." "There's something up there," cried Big Tiger, pointing to the poplar trunk. Christian tapped it. "It's hollow," he said. "An owl or a wildcat or a lynx lives in here." "No," Big Tiger disagreed. "Thorns and brush would have been stuffed into it. An animal doesn't do that. Perhaps it's a bird's nest." "Let's see," said Big Tiger. Christian clasped his hands. Big Tiger stepped on them, got hold of a branch, and swung himself up to a fork which came out from the trunk. "Come up," he cried. "There's something here which I can't make out. You must see it for yourself." Christian hesitated, but when Big Tiger assured him that the branch would hold them both, up he came and sat astride it. "You can't know just by looking," said Christian. "We'd need a rag or a glove," and he pulled at the thorns. "We must get them away," Big Tiger decided. "But if something jumps out suddenly?" "We'll work slowly. If some hidden creature wants to come out, we'll have time to get away." "Bolna," said Christian, and he looked uneasily at the sky, thinking it would soon be dark. The mysterious bundle of thorns was stuck fast in the hole, and they both had to pull hard and long before it moved. At last they drew it out. "There's nothing stirring," said Christian, peeping cautiously into the dark hole. "I can't see anything," said Big Tiger, looking in, too. "The smell would knock you over," said Christian. "Something is rotting here." "We must get to the bottom of this," decided Big Tiger, breaking a twig and poking it into the hole. "What's wrong with you?" asked Christian, alarmed, when he saw Big Tiger turning pale. "Is there something in there?" "There's some soft thing that sighs when I poke it." "You try." Christian took the stick timidly and found with horror that there was something wobbly which sighed and gurgled in the hollow of the tree. It made him feel quite sick, too, and he had to sit down on the branch. "Hello," cried Big Tiger, to show he had regained his courage. "Hello," Christian replied feebly. Then they looked at each other and tried to laugh, but they felt they were in a bad fix and it was getting very dark. Meanwhile, Big Tiger had thought up something desperately daring. "We must count 1, 2, and at 2, we'll reach into the hole together and pull out whatever is in there," he said. "But if it struggles?" "Even if it struggles," declared Big Tiger resolutely. "And if it bites, then we'll let go quickly." "Bolna," said Christian resignedly, "I'm with you." 1, counted Big Tiger, laying his hand on the edge of the hollow. Christian admired him and followed his example. Then Big Tiger cried 2, and as quick as lightning they both stretched their arms into the dark hole and grabbed the object, and Big Tiger shouted, "Hold tight, but it's wriggling," cried Christian. "Not much," said Big Tiger, gasping. "It's an animal, but it's got no hair, or very little. Pull quickly before it wakes up. It's hibernating." "You pull," said Christian, who wanted to let go, but he was immediately ashamed of himself, and they both pulled out the animal whose skin they had been gripping so desperately. Christian felt faint with horror, but kept his eyes bravely open. Big Tiger didn't feel too brave either. "It's a sleeping animal," he said faintly, looking at the booty. "But it hasn't got a head, and very little legs either." "That's because it's dark," said Big Tiger. "Oh, Kwee-chan," he shouted suddenly. "It's not an animal at all, but it was once. Now it's a goatskin full of arrack, and that's why the smell is knocking us over." "If that's what it is, there's a second one." "Yes, there is," said Big Tiger, poking again. "But we couldn't pull it out. It's too far in." "We'll leave it where it is," said Christian. "Then Nidong's wife won't be too angry with us when she goes to look for it." They pushed back the bundle of thorns into the mouth of the hole and climbed down. The moon had risen, and they could see the distant glow of the fire through the open door of the yurt and could hear Seven Stars calling alternately, "Kwee-chan!" and "Huta!" and the poodle barking. "We're coming!" Christian called back. "What'll we say to them? Quick!" whispered Big Tiger. "Will we have to tell a lie again?" asked Christian anxiously. "It can't be helped," said Big Tiger, "but it must be a splendid one and still not really a lie, for we mustn't betray Mother Nidong's hiding hole." "You're late," said Affliction. "Dinner is ready, and Mr. Nidong has been waiting a long time." "Please forgive us," cried Christian, while Big Tiger ducked down and laid the goatskin behind one of the rust-red trees in the shadowy moonlight. In the yurt, they were all sitting round the big pot of noodles. Besides Seven Stars sat a strange girl, laughing and whispering. "I've brought Turakina back," said Nidong, "to mind the yurt and the sheep while we're visiting the old Marin." "I have been anxious to make the acquaintance of that worthy man," said Good Fortune. "He doesn't live far from here, and we'll be there and back in a day's ride." "May we go with you?" asked Big Tiger politely. "Of course," said Nidong. "You honor me." "Same here," muttered Good Fortune, completing the silent understanding between the treasure hunters. After dinner, they had tea. Seven Stars, who sat near the door with Turakina, shut the two wings. "I do not want one of Big Tiger's words to get lost," she said. "Would it be possible for you to tell us all that your wise grandfather knows of the things of this world?" asked Affliction eagerly. "I have not got the ability to impart his wisdom," said Big Tiger modestly, but Nidong countered, "We pray you to do so." "First," began Big Tiger, "may I tell you something that I think worth mentioning?" "Certainly," said Nidong amiably. "Compass Mountain and I practice the art of silence," confessed Big Tiger. "For this reason, as evening was falling, we went up by the river in silence. We sat down at the ford, and because it is difficult to make a beginning in the practice of the 10,000 rules of wisdom, we decided to act like the three apes." "What did they do?" asked Affliction, eager for knowledge. "The first shut his ears," declared Big Tiger. "The second, his eyes. And the third, his mouth. And so they learned mutually not to hear, not to see, and not to speak. For this they became renowned. Many people carved them in wood or put them into music, and many who were serious-minded took the three apes as models. We did so, too, thinking it a good beginning. But when I wanted to shut my ears, I heard a rustling in the air. And when I wanted to shut my eyes, I saw two llama birds falling from the sky. Luckily, I was just able to keep my mouth shut, or I would have shouted out my delight. The llama birds were not swimming downstream like yesterday. They were saying, 'Yur, yur,' and swimming over to the other bank." Compass Mountain whispered, "They're calling, come, come. I hear them," I said, "and I believe we must do what they want us to do." So we took off our shoes and stockings and waded into the river, but it was very cold. And now the llama birds were no longer saying, "Yur, yur," but "Yama, yama," and flapping their wings. "What do they mean?" I asked, and Kwee-chan answered, "They're calling goat, goat, and I don't understand why." But we soon knew why, for there was a dead goat lying on the bank. It had been washed in, and its body was swollen up. It must have been lying in the water a long time, because the head and horns were gone, and it had no legs anymore, and we brought it back with us. "Would you like to see it?" asked Christian eagerly, standing up. "We'll bring it in," said Big Tiger, opening the door. "Phew, a dead goat," cried Seven Stars. "Phew!" echoed Turakina indignantly. "Leave it outside," cried Good Fortune. "Dead goats stink." "We only want the gentleman to see that we're accustomed to telling the truth," replied Big Tiger. "Just show it," said Affliction. "But don't bring it in. It would make me sick." Big Tiger and Christian went out to the trees, lifted the goat skin out of the moonlit shadows, and carried it to the yurt door. Big Tiger lifted it up and said, "This is the goat without head, horns, or legs, and it smells of arak." "Ha!" cried Good Fortune. "What a pair of proper little rascals! First-class scamps! There's no limit to what the young get into nowadays." Nidong jumped up, but then bethought himself, and approaching Big Tiger with dignity, he bowed with deep emotion. "You have brought me what my heart yearned for," he said. "Where have you been so long?" he asked, stroking the goatskin affectionately. "Ah, I know, you were lying in the water, but you have remained dry," he grinned. "I don't want to hear where you were, or to see where you lay hidden, but I wish to do honor to your two finders. Come, fetch glasses for the two sons of princes, Big Tiger and Compass Mountain," he cried. Seven Stars brought the brass can, and Turakina distributed graceful china beakers, not much bigger than thimbles. Nidong put on his fur hat, which made him look as dignified as a king in the midst of his subjects, and Affliction and Good Fortune, too, put on their military caps with the five-colored star. Christian and Big Tiger made haste to follow suit, then all sat down with covered heads. "Cha, cha, cha," murmured Nidong, raising the first beaker to his forehead and handing it to Big Tiger in both hands with great solemnity. "I do not dare," replied Big Tiger politely, nevertheless accepting the beaker. "You must drink it all," whispered Good Fortune. Big Tiger did so, but he coughed, for the arak burned like fire and took his breath away. Good Fortune slapped him energetically on the back. "Well, well," he said, "did you never drink a drop of spirits before?" "I didn't either," said Christian apologetically, seeing that Nidong was giving the next beaker to him. "Courage," whispered Good Fortune. Christian tried his luck and emptied the beaker at a gulp. "I do not dare, he gasped, and like Big Tiger, he began to cough. After the second round of drinks, Nidong beamed joyfully. "Now is the time," he said, "to rejoice our warmed-up spirits with a story. It need not be quite so true as the one about the speaking llama birds," chaffed Good Fortune. "The story I'll tell you," said Big Tiger, "is about a man named Yu San. His wife was called Yu Lan, and their little son was called Yu. All three had much in common. In the daytime, Yu Lan lay on the Kong, while Yu San stood at the door waiting for rain. In doing so, he forgot to water his fields in time. 'Have you been working?' asked Yu Lan in the evening, and Yu San replied, 'I have been working.' 'That is good,' said Yu Lan, 'but it was not good at all. It was bad.' However, by the time Yu Lan noticed that, it was too late. The spring sowing dried up, and Yu San said, 'That is because there was no rain.' 'Good for nothing, fellow,' cried Yu Lan. 'Go dig the ground up again, and we shall make a second sowing.' So Yu San went out to the fields with his hoe, and the old grandfather sat in the corner and said, 'Will you buy me a coffin, beloved daughter, since my son forgets this filial duty?' But Yu Lan shouted, 'Time enough for that, old fool.' She lay down on the Kong, and the little son Yu amused himself, pulling the white hairs, one by one, out of the grandfather's beard. 'Oh, that was terrible,' sighed Affliction. 'But go on with it. It's a sad story. I like it.' 'When Yu San looked at the field,' continued Big Tiger, 'he began sweating. He looked at his hoe, and his sweat flowed in streams, and he fell exhausted into a furrow. 'I shall remain lying here,' he said to himself, 'and by evening I shall have picked up plenty of courage, and when Yu Lan comes to the field, I shall say to her, "You lazy creature, do you not know that digging and hoeing are women's work?" This idea pleased Yu San greatly, and he slept soundly until he was wakened by footsteps. "You tramp!" shouted Yu Lan, kicking him. "Why aren't you hoeing?" "You lazy creature," whispered Yu San. "Don't you know that digging and hoeing are women's work?" When Yu Lan heard Yu San's impertinent words, she was horrified. He has suddenly become brave, she thought. I shall have to fear him. She took the hoe, but she had only hoed 3 or 4 strokes when she hit against something hard. Is there something there? Sneered Yu San. Yes, stammered Yu Lan, and it's hard. I'll help you, said Yu San graciously, and the two began digging together. The sun went down, and at long last they unearthed an old cask. It seems usable, said Yu San, tapping the staves. We could sell it, suggested Yu Lan, for we've really got nothing to put into it. Good, said Yu San. Now we'll roll the cask home. Grandfather can scrub it in the night. He can't sleep in any case, and in the morning when it's clean, we will sell it in the town. So they gave the poor grandfather a brush, and while Yu San and Yu Lan slept, he scrubbed the cask until the night turned to pale morning. But the grandfather turned pale, too. He fell down in a faint, and the brush fell into the cask. It had scarcely reached the bottom when there was a rustling noise, and the whole cask filled up with brushes. When the sun rose, Yu San and Yu Lan woke from their deep sleep, and the grandfather woke from his deep swoon. All three stood around the cask and wondered, and little Yu was there, too. "Unexpected riches have come our way," said Yu San. "Fetch a basket and fill the brushes into it, and I'll sell them in town." Yu Lan did as he bade her, and as quickly as she took the brushes out of the cask, it filled up again. Yu San and Yu Lan then realized that it was a magic cask. A prosperous life now began for Yu San and Yu Lan. Each morning they went into town and sold the brushes which the grandfather had to pick out of the cask. When they came home well fed, Yu Lan scolded the old grandfather. "You old fool, you've been lazy!" And Yu San said, "The barn should be full of brushes long ago. You must bend down faster. In these circumstances, there's no question of buying a coffin." Little Yu hopped to and fro and piped, "I've been kicking him all the time, but still he hasn't worked any faster. He's lazy." "Don't bother, my darling," Yu Lan said. "Here's a silver box for your trouble." Little Yu took the silver box and aimed it at the head of his grandfather, who was bending down with a groan to pick up a brush. The poor grandfather immediately got a bump as big as a hen's egg, but the box fell into the cask. In no time, the brushes had disappeared, and the cask filled up with silver boxes. "What a wonderful cask!" cried Good Fortune. "A really useful cask!" "Wait," said Affliction. "This story will end badly. You can see that already." "Go on," said Seven Stars. "What happened then?" "A first-class misfortune," prophesied Affliction. "No," said Big Tiger. Now Yu San and Yu Lan became really prosperous. The old grandfather with the big bump on his head was given a shovel. "Shovel, you old fool," they told him. Yu San removed the brushes from the barn, and the grandfather was told to fill it up to the roof with silver. "If you finished in 4 days," said Yu San, "I'll buy you a beautiful coffin."
"Leave it to me, Papa," cried little Yu. "I'll beat him with my whip if he's lazy."
Yu San and Yu Lan now no longer went on foot. They bought a donkey, and as they did not have to barter as before, but only had to hand out money, they did their shopping very happily. They ate expensive foods and drank the best wines, and of course they bought themselves silk garments, sternly insisting that the vendors call Yu San Your Excellency, and Yu Lan Gracious Lady. Meanwhile, the grandfather stood beside the cask, shoveling silver. His knees trembled, but when he wanted to rest, little Yu came with his little whip and lashed his ankles. The grandfather sighed, and because it was his last sigh, he fell head over into the cask, and his legs stuck out. In the evening, Yu San and Yu Lan came home on their donkey. A mountain of silver boxes lay piled in the barn, and in the cask lay the dead grandfather. Little Yu held his little whip in his hand and piped, "I did my best, but he died for spite." Yu San took hold of the grandfather, pulled him out of the cask, and laid him on the threshing floor. "It can't be helped," he said. "Now we'll have to buy a coffin."
"You're wrong," cried Yu Lan. "You must buy 2 coffins. There's another grandfather in there."
"Oh, whoa," exclaimed Yu San, taking the second grandfather by the collar and pulling him out. But the cask kept filling up again and again with dead grandfathers as quickly as Yu San pulled them out.
In the end, there was a whole crowd of them, and Yusan cried out in desperation, "I'll pull out this one, but not another." He had just pulled him out with a gasp when the cask broke into 1,000 pieces. There was fearful lamentation, for Yusan and Yulan had to mourn more than 100 dead grandfathers, and to buy more than 100 coffins, and to find money for more than 100 burials. Not a single silver bots was left. In fact, they had to borrow money, for which their little son Yu is still earning the interest by hard labor. "Serves him right," said Affliction joyfully. "There was no blessing on that business," said Good Fortune. "And small wonder," he added, "when the laws of heaven and reverence for old age are disregarded." "We'll drink one more glass and then go to sleep," said Naidong. "We must be in the saddle before sunrise."